Good evening and welcome to The Librarian on Authors on the Air. I am the librarian host, Tabitha Pope. This is a copyrighted and trademark podcast owned solely by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC, on the web at authorsontheair.com. Tonight I have, and I hope she's on the line, one of my favorite authors who last year I awarded the best book of 2015 to for her book, first book, debut book, historical fiction, Avalon. So tonight I have Marissa Campbell back on the air to talk about the second release, and it's been almost exactly a year since we last talked online or on the air. So if you're there, say hello. Are you there, Marissa? I'm not sure I have you on. Hold on a second. How about now? Can you hear me? Okay. Well, apparently we're having some audio issues. I'm going to try to call her back in. Hold on just a second. Is that any better? Hello, hello. Hello? Well, it looks like we're having audio issues. Marissa, if you can hear me, call back in. 347-633-9609. Are you there? Okay, well, I guess we're just having some audio issues tonight. Off and on, we have that problem with this. You shouldn't be on hold. No, you should be able to talk. Hold on. I'm making sure that your microphone is on. Marissa, you should be able to talk to me now. Okay. Yeah, try to call me. It's 347-633-9609. Can you hear me now? Okay, please wait while we have a little bit of technical difficulty here. We'll try to get it all going. I can hear you now.
Oh, yay! I'm here! It's so exciting when this works.
Who
awesome.
Knows?
The Sorry, what have
so
I
crazy.
Missed?
Nothing.
Okay. Awesome.
So I haven't even read your bio yet. So there you go. I just said you were my award-winning author from last year. So let me just tell everybody a little bit about you, and then we'll talk. So Marissa
awesome.
Campbell is a published freelance author and a co-author of the award-winning spiritual self-help book, Life, Living in Fulfillment Every Day. Her debut historical fiction, Avalon, was published through St. Martin's Press last year in September. And the second book is now out. It is Avalon, The Edge of Faith. She's a proud member of the Historical Novel Society, Romance Writers of America, Writers Community of Durham Region, and a local critique group called B7. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. When she's not writing, she's busy looking after her wonderful children, spending time with her fantastic husband, hanging out with her awesome friends. She loves to use adjectives. And teaching yoga.
There was no editor going through that. It was okay there.
Yeah. Teaching yoga, dancing, laughing, and having fun, and bicycling. That's your latest passion, huh?
It has been, yeah. I did a really great all-month-long drive for kids' cancer, and, it was cool. A lot of work, but it was fun.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, you guys had some great weather for it, too. You couldn't do that down here, so.
Oh, yeah, you guys were really rainy and stormy. Yeah, it was beautiful. Best summer we've had in a long time up here.
That's awesome. So, okay, so, well, I've told them all, you know, about that. You were my favorite book of last year, Avalon was. And so I've been really looking forward to the sequel and reading all about what happens with I almost called her Marissa. Avalon. Avalon and Eric as they move on, you know, to other adventures and run from the law, so to speak. So
yes.
So, but let's go back just a little bit and just talk a little bit about what Avalon was about so everybody would kind of know what to expect from the next one.
Wow. Okay. Well, geez, that was a whole year ago. I have to remember. Avalon, it's set in 869 Anglo-Saxon England. Most of it takes place in Somerset, actually. And at the time, Avalon's a little feisty. She kind of wants to live life on her own terms. And during that time period, that was not an easy thing for women to do. So she was up against quite a few roadblocks. And then, of course, she meets a Viking who just happens to be the enemy of all of England at the time. And she falls in love with him. So, again, more roadblocks. And, yeah, so it's just kind of her struggle on how to find who she is and where she kind of fits in this world. And she's also pagan, and, you know, England at the time had been converted to Christianity, though there were still pockets kind of floating around that practiced the old ways, but she was a firm believer in the goddess. So, yeah, there was quite a few things up against her right from the get-go.
Well, And it's funny how, because you just recently did a post and I was reading over it and, you know, writing is kind of that challenge. You've got all these things against you and you still have to, if you really want it, you have to kind of give it up and prevail through all those things. So I loved your post, by the way. It was a great post.
Thank you.
I love guest posts because it's like I get to read it before everybody else. So exciting.
Sure.
But yes, and she is kind of, it's weird because she's kind of like the modern woman in olden times carrying old past beliefs on with her. But is that really, I mean, if you think about it, it's probably really not anything new. It probably has been going on for many, many centuries because women in those cultures were held at a different level of esteem until the whole, I don't know what you want to call it, and I don't want to blame it on Christianity either, but the cultures moved to the east or the west, the eastern part of the west or whatever, they were taking over and the male dominance kind of took over the whole thing as they buried the other belief systems or religions. And even her father, you know, as much as he tried to act like the king, the big bad king, was very because of her mother, was very vulnerable and easy to sway, you know.
Yeah, she was
that.
Lucky
I like
she had him on her side, yeah.
Yeah, I like, and I really like that because, you know, it just shows that even though people had been,
swayed,
the conquest,
changed,
yeah, the conquest had forced them to change their beliefs, and over many generations they had just weeded it out. But, they were still really close to the whole time of the change, so that was neat. Go ahead.
So yeah, I was going to say it was interesting when I was doing the research because, you know, that kind of sense of this modern woman in this older time period, and people would say, you know, oh, you can't have somebody that gutsy, that feisty, set way back in 869. And, you know, when I envisioned Avalyn, it was because of the research I was doing, and I actually came across quite a few characters, real historical characters at the time,
mm-hmm.
who were doing things and going against the grain. Angerod, she is the Alfred the Great's daughter, and in Avalyn, in that story, Angerod is Avalyn's goddaughter.
Right. Yeah.
Right. You know, fictionalized, but where else is Angerod going to get her strength from, other than her, you know, other than Avalyn as a role model? So,
right.
Angerod, as a true historical figure, you know, she goes out, she leads armies, she's, you know, at the head of the army fighting the Vikings. She wins. She rules a kingdom. You know, there were women making things happen back in the day, mm-hmm. and to say that didn't exist or to use our distance to say that wasn't possible, you know, I think that it doesn't give credit to some pretty strong, powerful women doing things during the Dark Ages that, you know, we can't conceive of them doing. But, yeah, when the Normans came in 1066, you know, as you're talking about that wave sweeping over, that's when everything really, really changed. And
mm-hmm.
Women were, you know, you could be seen, but not heard, and
yeah,
you're supposed
property.
To be quiet. Yeah.
We became property. Yeah.
Yes, and chattel, yeah.
And it's really just, you know, I mean, in thinking about it, and, you know, you can say because of pagan beliefs or whatever you want to say about it. You know, I'm not going to get into anybody's religious upbringing, but the people who were there before even Avalyn's culture,
right.
even her time, were so earth-based, and, you know, they didn't have a lot of this, oh, men, this, oh, that. They believed in such primitive things, you know, like the earth being the mother, and they understood that women gave birth and that they, you know, brought forth life, and they honored that, you know, rather
yes,
than
it was sacred, absolutely.
Yeah, rather than just you're the one that pops out the kids and takes care of them and type of thing. So I mean, it's just like it, to me, when her character is just hanging on to those. It's like her in her spirit. It's all ingrained in her spirit and has been brought through time, through her mother, and I'm sure through her mother and on the way. But that's just really, I think that the spirit even lives on today in people, even though they may not even know where it came from. But
right,
you know, it's there.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I agree completely. You know, I've taught yoga for over a decade now. And, you know, I see it a lot in my practice and in my circles that, you know, people are looking for something different, something else to connect to. Like you said, that earth-based, that kind of goddess mentality, something mm-hmm. older, wiser, intrinsic, organic. And you know, I wanted to explore that with Avalyn and have her feel that, you know, really, really deep within her core is that being a part of her. So, yeah, I got mm-hmm. to play with that. It comes even more to the surface in the second book too.
Yeah, neat.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that's cool because, and remember, when I wrote my review, I said that you were kind of like the perfect blend between like Philippa Gregory and Diana Gabaldon, because it's that history sense with a little bit of the mystic mixed in, you know, but not enough to go, oh, that's paranormal or that's, you know, fantasy, but it's just enough to, you know, make the history come alive, because that's, if you know history, that they really did believe these things back then. I know we talked about it this last time, like Outlander. I mean, the Scottish people were still really, really deep in their superstitions and beliefs about, you know, all kinds of things. And then the same thing with the Tudor times and before that, that Philippa Gregory, you know, the people still held on to those things. Even centuries later, they were still holding on to those things. They were not allowed. They were banned. They were, you were going to get burned for it, burned at the stake. But
yes. But, yeah, very true.
But they still held on to him. And she brought that to life. And so does Dinah Gabaldon. And that's what I found in Avalon, that you were bringing that to life. And it's just crap. I mean, I started laughing so loud. I was so happy when I saw your cover blurb and somebody else mentions it. And I was like, yes, somebody else got it.
Yeah.
And then
it was hard. Yeah, I mean, but it's hard as a novelist. You know, they always say, write the book that you want to read. The problem is the book that I wanted to read doesn't necessarily fit nice and neat into a little genre box.
Right.
And I remember somebody asking me, like, how would you describe it? Where would you fit it? And, you know, I had to come up with this really convoluted answer. Like, it's a historical adventure with mystical romantic elements. So, you know, it's not just historical, though it's very firmly grounded in historical fact and atmosphere. And it's not, like you said, it's not fantasy, but it dances, you know, it dances around the what ifs and the possibilities of, and then you have the good, very steamy romance. Actually, it was really funny. I got a review, and it was the best line ever. And she called me the sex whisperer. And I thought, I want that on a plaque.
No kidding. That's awesome.
That's great. So, yeah, it's hard, but it's not just romance. It's so much deeper than that. There's so many more levels to it. So, yeah, it kind of, like you said, it's a blend. So.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. And yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be able to like toss it in one or the other either, but except for, you know, my favorite. There you go. That's my favorite brand right there. You know, it's got, you know, historical romances are wonderful and historical fiction is wonderful. But if you throw in some kind of just enough to keep it believable, then yeah. And then if you had some hot sex in it, excellent. Perfect.
Boom.
That is perfect book right there for me. Yes.
Magic combo.
That's right. And when I read Avalon, that was why it took me kind of just like, it took me over. It was such a great combination of all of that. And I mean, I really did feel like I was, you know, reading something that was way beyond a debut novel from you. So that was awesome.
Thank you.
And I'm so excited. I wish my son hadn't been so sick. I would stay up night reading, the book instead of with him. So
I know, poor wee man though.
Yeah,
you're allowed. Yeah. Moms come first.
Yes, but I will definitely get it. You know, I'm like chomping at the bit to read that one. So I've only been waiting a year.
And you know what? I'm pretty impressed with myself that I actually got it out within a year. Like, I really wanted the release date to be September 8th because that was the date of Avalon's release.
Uh-huh.
And so I was trying so hard to have it ready. So September 26th, I was still really close.
No, that is very close, actually. Better than most people, you know, that try to set a deadline and never make it. Even the big publishers have trouble making those deadlines. So that's excellent. Good job. And I know you're working on lots of other projects too. So
Yes, because apparently a writer cannot be idle. So
nope.
Yes, type.
Well, unless you want to come down here and take care of my kids, and then, you know, you won't be idle, but you won't be typing either.
Fair enough. Yes, yes. Although that would be hard to explain to my kids why I'd have to
right.
go down, but yeah.
Yeah, in the middle of the winter, you might want to come down here. So,
yes, definitely. If that's an open invitation.
Yes, yes. So, okay, so you you published the first one with St. Martin's. Hold on, I'm going to cough real quick. Yes, that's mommy trying not to get the virus.
Wow.
So you published the first one through St. Martin's. And now you've gone and you've self-published.
Gone rogue. Yes.
Yes, you've gone rogue. And it's really great because I think that you deserve probably the bigger chunk of it all. You did all the work. And you kept the cover so perfectly the same. How did you manage that?
Oh, you know what? I can't take all the credit for that. So Jenny at Historical Editorial, she I actually approached another writer up here, Mary Todd. She does beautiful historical fiction as well. And I asked her, I said, your covers are so beautiful. You know, your books are incredible. Who do you use? Because she self-published her first couple of books. And so she told me, well, contact Jenny. And so I contacted Jenny and said, look, you know, this is kind of what I'm looking for. Is this something that you would be interested in? And she said, absolutely. And, yeah, we started brainstorming. I had an image in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And we just, yeah, she found the perfect model, I guess, in the image. And I said, okay, let's make it a blue cape and let's make her hair blonder and, you know, let's put her here. And the two of us just came up with this incredible cover, and I wanted to keep the same font, you know, the
uh-huh.
same typeface with Avalyn. And it was important to me to have Avalyn in the title still because
mm-hmm.
I wanted continuity.
Right.
So, yeah, it just, oh, yeah, I'm like, I'm super thrilled. Like it's a beautiful, beautiful cover.
It is. It's just like captures the whole spirit of, you know, the quest that they're going on and all the weird things that she happened to her and everything else. I mean, it's perfect. It's really great. So yeah, that's a good job. Isn't it neat how you can find people that can, you know, do that exact thing like that for you?
I've been lucky, you know, maybe I should knock on wood, but, you know, I've always found that when you're out there and you throw it out to the universe or God or whoever your higher power is, and you just have that vision in your head, you're going to draw people to you that can help you realize it. And even if you're not 100% certain what it is, you know,
mm-hmm.
finding the right people can help just, you know, focus it and narrow it down. And the interior designer as well, Dina Harrison, she blew me away. Like the chapter headings that she did, like she used the font throughout. It
mm-hmm.
looks even inside, it looks even nicer than the first book. And that the first book was through the publisher. So I am beyond thrilled with how this book turned out. And for me, because when you do self-publish, and I speak to a lot of writers about this, you know, when you self-publish, this is still you. This, you are your brand. It is your name. And
yeah.
when you're throwing something like that out there, it has to be the absolute best quality you can possibly make it. Like, you should not be cutting any corners on this. So, you know, I went through the whole procedure. I had it structurally edited, I had it copy edited, I had it proofed, you know, I had it professionally designed, both the interior and the exterior. It was really important for me that this book would not lack in quality, and you would not be able to tell any difference between a book you picked up that had a HarperCollins or a Penguin on it and
mm-hmm.
the quality of this book.
And I don't think you can. I mean, it really looks amazing. And I know that's a lot more work than you know, you probably had to do for the first one. So.
Yes, Yes, definitely. You know, it is nice to have a publisher who, you know, will do the editing for you, and you just kind of go through and approve all the changes.
Mm-hmm.
And they foot the bill for all that. So that's really
right.
Nice, too. Yeah. but, you know, I don't know. I had a vision for this book, and it didn't matter whether I was publishing it or a publisher was publishing it. Like, it just, I needed the consistency. And with this book, I have to be completely honest, this book was for the fans, like for the people who loved Avalyn. Because I had a choice. I could either let it sit and not do anything with it, write a few other books and see if they took off and then reapproach publishers. Or I could say, no, you know what, they've already waited a year. I want to get this book out, and this is for them. So, yeah, that's what I did.
Oh, well, thank you. Because
yeah.
I appreciate it. I don't know if anybody else does, but I do.
I've heard a couple of people are happy, but yeah.
Yay.
Yeah.
Well, that's
you
great.
You know what, a writer, you can't be a writer without your readers. And, you know, to toil in obscurity and have nobody read it, I don't want to do that. I get joy knowing somebody's enjoying my words, and, you know, that makes me happy at the end of the day, right?
Yes, absolutely. So so your obsession with Vikings went a little further this year. Tell me a little bit about your how fun the photo shoots were, because they were just awesome. I mean, I was so jealous.
You.
I was like, that just looks like so much fun.
That was a lot of fun. So there's I'm doing a little column in a local newspaper, and it's called The Yes Woman. And it's because of the philosophy that I have that basically you say yes to life. If an opportunity comes up, you just do it. If there's any excitement to be had, I'm going to be there. If it's something new and intriguing, I'm going to try it. So I read a book a long time ago, and in the story, this woman was a romance writer, and she was being carried in on like a pallet with a whole bunch of, you know, half naked men into her book launch.
Awesome.
And my first thought was, oh my God, I want to do that. I want to be the woman with half naked men carrying her into my book launch. So I decided to scale it down a little and just find a couple of half naked men and have a photo shoot. And it was, oh my goodness, it was a riot. Now, I actually am very nervous in front of the camera, so I do have to admit that there was some wine involved in this photo shoot. But by the end of the night, I was in quite a good mood, and we just had a ball. I had two wonderful young men who they got right into the role. And then I had another gentleman come out. And so actually there was three for the photo shoot. A lot of the book signings actually hired them back, but usually only two came at a time. But for the photo shoot, there was actually three. And it was funny because two of them were 6 foot something, and I'm 5 foot two on a really good hair day. And I had to stand on stools. So it was very much like the movies. You know, Chris Hemsworth is really, really tall, and Natalie Portman is really, really short. And for some of the photos, you could see that she was standing on a stool so that when he went to kiss her, he wasn't kissing air. So it was exactly like that. It was very glamorous. I had a step stool so that I could be on some sort of eye level with these guys instead of just staring at their pecs, which, you know, wouldn't have been a bad thing.
Isn't
either.
So bad, right?
not so bad. But yeah, no, it was a riot. And yeah, so we used that in the promotion for Avalyn. And it's actually, there's a nice photo in the teaser, the trailer that I've done. I used one of the photos from the photo shoot in the actual trailer for The Edge of Faith. So
that's just awesome.
It was fun. It was a lot of fun. It was not hard at all.
No,
not a hard job.
I can't even imagine. That was just Well, how neat that you can use that, you know, for promotions too. So you had fun and you got to use it. So it's all great.
It was a win-win. Yeah.
Yeah. So we are, let's see, where are we? We're about halfway. We're a little more than halfway. Well, considering we had 10 minutes of flubbing, but that's okay. I'll cut it off later. so tell us what else you're working on. I know that the Vikings aren't the only things that you're working on, and that you write some other things. So you post a lot about Hot in Aruba. So talk
right.
to us
yes.
a little bit about that.
Hot in Aruba is my first contemporary romance. So this is romance. And it's romance with, I guess it's not really Harlequin romance because I know they have to have a very specific structure. So this would be more like a chick lit movie, but mm-hmm. without the chick lit, you know. The lake house kind of thing comes to mind, something like that, where it's just really poignant. It's about these two characters. So in Hot in Aruba, the story revolves around Samantha and Carlos. I actually wrote a little short story called Italian Delicacy, and I was just giving it away free for anybody who mm-hmm. signed up for my newsletter, and uh-huh. it was a big hit. So I thought, I need to develop a story around these characters. So a novel kind of came into being, and they've been friends for a very long time. So it's one of those friends to lover stories. Mm-hmm. And the story starts out, she's with like a real jerk, and Carlos really wants to prove that she can do better, that he can treat her better. And an opportunity comes up to have them both go away to Aruba together.
Ah.
And over the course of 10 days, you know, she says, okay, you've got 10 days. She ends up breaking up with this douchebag and says, all right, you've got 10 days to make me change my mind. And it's a good book. I had a lot of fun writing that one. But there's, you know, there's, it's not simple, of course, because we can't have it nice and easy.
No.
There's secrets. There's some lies. There's some past baggage. And so the 10 days isn't all just, you know, laughter and, you know, sex on the beach and drinks by the pool. You know,
right.
There's some shadows lurking behind the sunshiny days. So, yeah. So that's that one. So I'm excited about that one. I just finished the first draft of that. So I'll be polishing that up. And yeah, I'm excited.
So what else do you have working on? Yeah, I know. So that's good, though. Keep them coming.
Other than that, the third book in the Avalon series is percolating. So there's, as long as there's a readership there, then I am uh-huh. very happy to continue their tale because there's so much more to tell. That one's percolating. I could tell you that will take them to Russia at the time, the land of the Rust. Yeah, so the land of the Rust, way over there. So that the story will take place mostly there, possibly a little bit in France and a little bit in Sweden. So we've done England, we've done Wales, because the second mm-hmm. book, The Edge of Faith, is set in Wales, actually.
Uh-huh.
And then they go across the channel and away they go. And yeah, that's kind of neat because I know very little at this point of the Rus', the people who live in, you know, what's current day Russia now. So that'll be
uh-huh.
that'll be interesting to learn about. Yeah.
Yeah. That'll be fun. Well, you know, I love research, so let me know.
Yeah. One of the best parts of writing. I love learning.
Oh,
so.
I know. And that's, I think that's what sets, of course, that's what sets historical novelists apart from just contemporary writers. But it really does stem from the love of wanting to know, like, what were they like? Oh, let me go look. And then you get off on a tangent and, you really get into it.
And exactly.
Spark that story just perfectly from there. And that's where, I mean, contemporary is great, and that's I love to read contemporary. I read it when I need something quick, you know, quick. Usually it's quick reads type of contemporary. When I really want to get into a book, like deep, I will read a historical, because
nice.
I love to learn. I learned so much from your book, just, you know, that it made me, things would go, oh, really? And I'd go look them up and, you know, just to find out more. And, but I do that when I read historicals, and it, you know, it's helped for somebody who has that kind of research bug in them anyway. Historical anything makes you start thinking, oh, I got to find out more about that, you know. So it's neat.
I'm with you. That's also why I read historical. I mean, I read what I like to write too, right? So I love learning. Like, take me to a different place I don't know about. Take me to a different time can only imagine, and let me live it and experience it through your words. I'm with you. I'm so with you on that one.
So you may have more Avalyn's coming then.
I hope so. I mean, you know, the third story's there. You know, it's really funny because when I first started writing Avalyn, I had, a plot arc, like an overall story arc that I wanted to work with. And it basically spans 7 years historically, like in the true historical time period, the story arc from what begins in the first book historically doesn't end for 7 years until 7 years later. So I had envisioned, writing the second book, maybe jumping ahead a couple years, and then the third book jumping ahead a couple years, something like that, so that I could easily pass the 7 years. When I wrote the second book, actually, unfortunately, that takes place over really about a month and a half.
Oh, wow.
So, I didn't that whole kill 7 years thing didn't really happen for me. Because I only killed a month and a half. So, there's a lot of trouble. There's a lot of conflict. There's a lot of really good stuff historically happening during that time period, and it would be very easy to slot Avalyn and Alric in as they continue both on their quest. She wants to go home, and he wants to go home too, but he wants to earn that respect and that favor with the gods and respect with his people that his half-brothers have taken away from him. So they're both on their own kind of individual quest, and that actually really comes through in the second book. They actually, their individual quests come into conflict with one another. So the relationship itself hits a couple of bumps in the road. So I'm interested in exploring that, those quests further for those guys to actually see what happens to them, because I know the end, but I have no idea what happens between that month and a half that's passed and
seven years
from now. Yeah. I'm still learning. I'm still trying to figure it out.
Well, I'm sure they'll come to you and tell you what they need to tell us. So
yeah, they're forceful that way in the shower, when I'm on the toilet. Yeah. They're always kind of there.
It's always when you don't have a pen around, too. So it's like,
never. Yeah, 3 o'clock in the morning. Oh, that's a good scene. Oh, and then, 6 o'clock in the morning. What was that scene? Yeah.
Yep. I unfortunately have that trouble, too. But it's just one of those hashtag writer life or something like
yes.
that.
Writer life. Yes, absolutely.
There you go. So we have about 19 minutes left. I'm going to put the phone number out if anybody's listening and they want to call in. There is something to be giving away if you want to call in, 347-633-9609. And you can talk to Melissa and you can ask questions about Alric because he's very hot, very hot. Did you have anybody in mind? I don't know if I asked you this last time. Did you have a face or a body or a, celebrity in mind that you kind of pictured when you were writing his character?
Oh yeah, yeah. He's definitely a cross between Chris Hemsworth and the name's actually escaping me. That's terrible. The Travis Fimmel from the Viking series Ragnar. Yeah, he's like a cross, like, you know, Travis is like piercing blue eyes, you know, that cornflower blue, and Chris's beautiful, beautiful body. So yeah,
that's the truth.
It's an amalgamation of the two in my mind. It's kind of when I think of Alric, it's kind of Ragnar's quiet strength that, you know, because Alric doesn't say a lot, but it's how he interacts with Avalon that we get to know him as a person and why he's kind of doing what he's doing. And in the second book, I think we even get a little deeper into what drives him, what motivates him. And in the third book, when I do write it, I haven't decided yet, but I'm even toying with possibly writing some scenes from his point of view. So that will be interesting. That'll be quite a step away because so far the two novels have just been Avalon's POV. So I haven't committed to that. I have not. So, you know, this isn't breaking news, but this is a writer's meanderings, you know, thought processes, hums and haws. But I think I think it would be neat to hear from him personally, especially since this third book is actually, there's a lot going to revolve around his life and his upbringing and the expectations that he faces and struggles with culturally, you know. So it'll be interesting. Again, toying with it.
Yeah. Well, that's funny because, you know, when you actually sit down to write, it's going to go wherever it goes anyway. So you'll be like,
this
okay,
is true.
Well,
I have no say whatsoever. Yeah. Actually, I was speaking to somebody about that earlier, and they said, what's your process? You know, how do you develop your characters and how do you, you know, outline your plot? And I said, I'm like one of those organic, intrinsic. It just kind of flows through me. And now that doesn't mean on some days
there's
not a lot of
plan,
static.
Yeah.
Right. And with Avalon 1 and Avalon 2, I did not plot it out. I did not outline. I pantsed by the seat of my pants, and sometimes my pants were on fire. Yeah. So, you know, I don't really have a process other than to say, I reflect and I ruminate a lot. So there's a lot of times when I'm actually not writing because it has to percolate. It has to, I need to know what scene's going to be next or how I want them to act. And yeah, it's actually a rather slow process. I know writers who can put a book out in a month, and it takes me about a year to write a book. I'm not speedy.
Yeah,
I'm like the turtle.
It's like you said, though, it's that whole, you know, the process to get it authentically out of you and onto the page without it being forced. And then, you know, when you force things, you get garbage. So that's okay. So we don't want garbage. We want the real story. So let them talk.
Yeah.
Let them take their time. It's good.
Yeah, I learned the hard way. I did NaNoWriMo 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
The National Novel Writing Month. And I think it's 30,000 or is it, no, 50,000. You have to get 50,000 words. Yeah. In 1 month. So from November 1st to the end. And it was something like 1,666 words a day you had to basically commit to producing.
Yeah.
And I was working on Avalon 2, The Edge of Faith at the time. And I sat down every day, and I did. I forced those 1,666 words out. It was like pulling blood from the stone, but I was there. I was at my desk at all hours of the day trying to get those 10 extra words more. And by the end of the 50,000 words, at the end of that month, I ended up scrapping 40,000 of them. Because it was brutal. I will never do this again. It's so not my process. But I ended up scrapping 40,000 of them because I kept being led on tangents that the story didn't want to go in. So I was forcing us just to write it. And it took me stepping back, going, why can't I finish this book? Why is this not right? Why doesn't this feel right? To realize, oh, you know what? It's not right because way back 40,000 words ago, that's where it went wrong. And yeah, I had to ditch them all and kind of start all over again. So yeah, so I learned, poor thing for me, not good.
Well, and everybody's different. I mean, just like readers are all different. So you really can't force it. Some people, I guess, and really, I think contemporary writers write faster because you just turn on the news, you get inspiration, you know, you've got this constant bombardment of contemporary things going on. You can probably pull, but you really got to dig down for historical and kind of put your mind in that place that isn't present in right now. So, yeah, it's a little harder.
You know what's really interesting, though, because obviously I've not written a contemporary romance before Hot in Aruba. I thought, wow, this process will be so much easier because, A, there's no research. You know, B, it's all current. I can use current swear words. I can, you know, make cultural references and social references. And, you know, I mean, they're texting at one point in the book, and I was really excited to be able to do that. But
yeah.
the process is still the same. I still would have to stop and I would be stuck on where to go. And with this one, I actually tried outlining. I've got two huge whiteboards in my office, and I sat down, and I'm a big fan of Save the Cat as for helping people for screenwriting, but then translating it into how to write your acts in fiction. And I sat down and I plotted, okay, if I was going to have the end of Act 1, what would that be? And I put in a scene. And, you know, the end of Act 2, what would that be? And my climax, what would I have happen? And I actually sat down with sticky notes and dry erase markers. And I went to town. You should see it. It's a beautiful piece of art up on my wall. And... you know, it helped. What was interesting is it helped for the first part, the first act, and it helped from the climax to the end, because I already knew what the climax was going to be when I came up with this story.
Mm-hmm.
But the messy, murky middle that every writer hates, it was a big blank line. No matter how much I plotted around it or tried to outline it or tried to figure out what it could be, the whole messy middle was blank.
Oh, just so had to come to you anyway, huh?
It had to come to me anyway. Despite doing everything to try to avoid that, I still had to stop and sit. And I think there was probably about a month and a half, almost 2 months, where I couldn't get any writing done because I hadn't figured out what came next.
Oh, wow.
It's an interesting... it's an interesting process. So I had burned through the first, the first act because I had everything written out, and I thought, wow, this is great. I'm going to be like one of those writers who can get it done in like 6 months. And then I hit the middle, and it was full break. Oh, maybe not.
That's got to be frustrating, though. I would get like a little bit tense.
Well, you know, I mean, I would walk by my whiteboard every day, and I'd be like, huh, still empty. And then, you know, I'd walk away, and you get involved with your kids, and it was the summer, so it was not a horrible time to have writer's block, right? So, you know, I found other things to fill the time with, but it still percolated that entire time, and it wasn't really until September when I went, oh, that's it, and then I could write again. So, yeah, it was interesting.
And after that, it went pretty quickly then.
It did. Yeah, it did after that because I knew what my climax was going to be. I knew how I had to get there, and I knew after the big dun-dun-dun moment how it ended, right? So,
yeah,
it flew. It flew after that, but, yeah, that.
So do you pretty much always know what the ending when you start? Are you most of the time? Like you said, you have this art for Avalyn, the whole – big story.
Yes. So originally when I thought of Avalyn as a story, this whole gigantic story arc that I had, I knew the ending because I had a historical, there's a specific battle that happens. And I knew that was going to be the ending of the story, that one very decisive, brutal battle. And I thought, okay, I will just write my story, and that'll be the end. The problem was I realized, there's way too much story between point A and point Z. That can't be the end of this book. So what would be the end of this book? And then I had to think of what the end of that book was going to be. And then, yeah, basically I sat down every day and tried to think of how I would get from A to the new Z for the first book. And when I wrote the second book, I knew the beginning, fortunately, because I had the ending to go off of the first book. And I knew what the ending was going to be for the second book. And I even knew the climactic scene. So I usually have the climactic scene in my head. And it's very cinematic for me. It would be like sitting down and, you know, being Avatar, right? I am in that scene. I am so there. And it's like, well, you know, this sucks because I know that scene and now I have to write 80,000 words to get there. So that's hard. You know, it's like delaying gratification, and I'm not good at that. So,
not many people are.
Oh, it's a long way to wait to get to that beautiful scene. So, yeah, when I reached that with Hot in Aruba, I was so excited because I'd had it in my head, and it was just crystal clear, and it was so nice to actually get that tension and that conflict down in that big explosive moment that I had been waiting, you know, 70,000 words for. So, yeah, fun.
Well, awesome. Well, we're glad you got it down because I'm really excited to read. I've read your little excerpts and it sounds really racy and fun. I'm excited.
It's a little bit of yummy stuff in there.
Yummy stuff's good. Yummy stuff's good. Well, I am so glad we got a chance to talk, and I really am dying to get my stuff over for this weekend so I can start reading that book. So, yeah, I'll let you know as soon as I can. Trust me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I just hope your little man feels better.
Me too. He seems to be getting a little better. So the big mega fever's gone, so that's good because that was scary. And
yeah, I don't like those.
Well, we live in a college town, too, and we've been out to eat, you know, in the last couple of nights at places where college students are our waiters. And then he said his neck hurt and he had 104 fever. And I was like, let's go to the emergency room now because I don't want to wait and find out. Let's just rule it out now. And then, you know, because it's obviously it's been a really big thing at Texas A&M and the other big schools.
Has it really?
Meningitis. Yeah, they've been making the kids get inoculated.
Wow.
Yeah. But my kid is, you know, 5 and he doesn't get those.
No.
Freaking out.
No. Yeah. I'm trying to remember how old my kids were when they got Menactra up here. And we didn't get them the shots when they were younger, but as soon as my kids went off to college or university, it was like, you get that shot now. So,
yeah, that's when they're saying that they should get them now. So
yeah,
here. So yeah, I was a little freaked out.
I'm glad it's okay.
Yeah, me too. It was just a really one of those days where you just go, there isn't enough alcohol to even make it. Where's my time? So I'm just gonna let it go.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's all good. It's all good. And I'm glad we got a chance to talk again because, I'm so excited about reading it that I can't believe it's sat there on my Kindle for so long and I haven't touched it.
You haven't even peaked? Really? Wow.
No, I peaked. I did peak. I will totally admit to that one. But yeah, as far as being able to get into anything yet,
not happening.
Anyway, so what do we have to expect? When are you planning Hot in Aruba? Any idea, like ballpark?
Oh, my goodness.
Too much pressure?
Well, you know what? With Avalon, I've learned that this is not a quick process. So when it was finished being edited, so the first draft is done. I'm just going through now the kind of the last cleanup edit that I will do before I send it off to my agent. And my agent, Margaret Bale at Inklings Literary, she will get back to me with a million things that she wants changed and things she doesn't like about it. And then I will have to then incorporate all of that. And then I'll send it back to her. And when I get her stamp of approval, then she will shop it out to publishers.
Awesome.
And then if we get any offers from publishers, then I will have to go through the same process all over again with the editors, what they don't like, what they want changed. And then we go through the whole production process. Now, with Avalon, just the production process alone took a year and a half.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So you have no idea.
I have no idea. No, unfortunately. I mean, you know what? If I won the lottery, then I could absolutely self-publish it and get it out there, you know, within the next 4 to 5 months. But yeah. Without that large influx of cash, probably not.
I hear you. Well, but,
much
success.
I'll have teasers and little excerpts. I'll have stuff to whet your appetite between now and then.
Well, we'll put the flirt out for sure. That's exciting. I wish you much success, my friend. Avalon will, I'm sure, be very successful, and best of luck shopping that one around.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And don't get too cold up there this winter. Like I said, Texas is always available if you want to come south for the winter.
At some point, I might. They're calling for horrible, horrible, like, hibernate, never go outside cold. So I might take you up on that.
I'm miserable. I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you do it. Well, take care. And thank you so much for the book. And I will tell you how much I adore you very soon.
Awesome.
And guys, go pick it up. Pick it up today on Amazon. And you can find them. You can just look for Marissa Campbell on Amazon, and you can type in Avalon, two N's, AVELYNN. You can find the book and download it. I recommend the first one highly, and I'm sure I'm going to recommend the second one. So I'll sure let you know soon.
Awesome.
All right. Have a great evening. And thanks again for coming online and talking to me.
Always a pleasure, Tabitha. Thanks for having me.
Have a great evening.
You too. Bye.
And for the rest of you, we'll see you again next Thursday at, I think I have a show again at 7:30 Eastern time, but there is a recorded podcast at 9 tonight with Julianne Long. So listen in for that as well. And other than that, I will see you guys next week. Have sweet dreams.